welcome to this special episode of Cinematica. I'm Dan Slevin. The New Zealand International Film Festival is one of the most complex and challenging events that you can possibly imagine. Over 150 films playing at dozens of venues all over the country, starting in Auckland today. For a change, we at Cinematica aren't going to talk about the movies themselves, but instead we're looking at the event and the people behind it. I started off last week by talking to Festival Director Bill Gosden on a rainy and freezing morning at Wellington's Paramount Theatre. We talked about what it takes to manage the biggest movie event in the New Zealand calendar. Later on in the show, I'll introduce you to some of the behind-the-scenes team who make all the magic happen. If you love the festival, these are the people that you should be thanking. I'm going to apologise for the sound of the rain on the tin roof in this first segment. It is just an atmosphere.
Bill Gosden, welcome again to Cinematica. Here we are both huddling around a small oil heater at the Paramount Theatre while the rain thunders on the roof. This is classic film festival going weather, isn't it?
It's the kind of worst of it. Beyond this point, people just stay at home, which I wouldn't have minded doing myself this morning.
Yeah, that's right. People who book in advance, they're loath to squander those tickets, aren't they? You know, once they've made the commitment, they will follow through.
Yeah, you will see a few empty sold seats when the weather turns nasty. There's no doubt about it. There's also the flu can keep people away, but we don't want to encourage people from buying in advance. That's for sure.
Yeah. I was preparing for this interview by re-listening to a couple of our previous conversations because...
Mark is a true professional.
Yeah, we call it research. Some of those conversations are actually... many of the things that we talked about are still valid because they're discussions about how the festival gets programmed, the selection process, and how you put together a portfolio of films that will appeal to there's no way a program can appeal to everybody in its entirety, but elements of it will go out to different segments of the film going community.
That's certainly what we hope for.
Yeah. And so I think that rather than readdress that sort of that side of things, I'd like to talk to you about the event itself and the fact that as an event management exercise, it's got to be one of the most trying, difficult, ambitious projects in the New Zealand calendar.
I think the one advantage we have, for example, over the International Arts Festival is that the films don't talk back, that we're dealing often with inanimate objects that have to be moved around the country, often but by no means always. There's a lot of management involved. We're also dealing with a lot of venues, and they all have their very different agendas. You're quite familiar with quite a few of them, so you know how differently many of the cinemas that we work with operate. That's been a particular challenge this year with the introduction of the VPF system and quite a lot of ignorance around what that would entail for the film festival on the behalf of quite a few of the people who are actually signing up for it, frankly.
Well, let's talk about a bit about that because you're right. There is a sort of fear, uncertainty, and doubt going around a lot of people, and I know a lot of the smaller festivals are very concerned about what the VPF, which is the virtual print fee, which is the mechanism that many cinemas are using to pay for the installation of the new digital equipment. That's essentially right?
It's the mechanism whereby the distributors are offsetting the costs. But in exchange, I think it has to be said that the distributors maintain a degree of ownership of the equipment, which if I were an independent operator, I would feel quite alarmed about. I also think that it that it's probably something that is likely to work against small operators, where the return from a film is going to be quite small, and the distributor is obliged to pay them a fee for using their equipment anyway. The distributor might not be inclined to supply that film if he or she feels that the VPF payment is going to exceed the film hire.
And not just small distributors, but even but filmmakers who are self-distributing are finding that that there's some of the avenues, some of the locations where they might be able to put their films are too expensive to to go into. And is this, how has that impacted on you this time around?
Because the major impact of it this year really has actually been in delaying a lot of negotiation and delaying a lot of signature on venue contracts while the venue operators waited for the VPF system to kick in. In the case of the independent operators, it hasn't kicked in. So we, well, certainly not for any of the festivals that are on sale at this point. So ultimately, it really just delayed things and caused a lot of frustration. But the ultimate negotiation around those issues probably lies ahead of us for the key Auckland and Wellington venues in the year ahead.
Your biggest venue in Auckland, the Civic, does that's installed their own equipment, so they're not
that's
necessarily
right.
A problem for you?
Yeah, that's right. And that's the case with several of our key venues, in fact, the Regent in Dunedin and also Sky City Theatre, which is our number two venue in Auckland. So there's no VPFs in place there.
Let's digress a moment while we're talking about those cornerstone venues for you in your main centres. The Christchurch situation. Presumably that fundraising exercise for the Isaac Theatre Royals fit out. That even though the boosted campaign fell a little bit short, that's still ongoing. You're still working hard on
that. That's a many pronged. Fundraising effort in the hope that the Isaac Theatre Royal, which is being rebuilt, basically, there's not much of it survived the earthquake and subsequent demolition. I was down there on Monday in Christchurch and I saw that there's just a facade in front of a building site, basically. Anyway, it's our hope that we can raise the funds to equip that rebuilt cinema with DCP. So that the film festival in Christchurch can finally have a flagship venue comparable to what we enjoy in Auckland, Dunedin, and Wellington.
In the meantime, how difficult is it for you to actually run an event in Christchurch?
People in Christchurch are used to having the festival sliced and diced, really, because it's a very long time since we screened in the Regent, which was our perfect venue. It had a big room upstairs and a smaller one downstairs. It was terrific. So it's not ideal, particularly when we have filmmakers introducing their films and the audience is split between several small rooms. But there are quite a few film festivals in the world that do have to operate this way. But it would be great if we could have a situation in Christchurch such as we enjoy everywhere else, where there is one principal big house available to the film festival and the other venues we would hope that Hoyts would want to retain their involvement with the film festival and make some of their multiplex screens available. I have to say that Hoyts Northland is actually, apart from the commute, a great venue for the festival as multiplexes go. It's quite has quite pleasant foyer space, and the actual cinema is incredibly comfortable, great sound, big screen, nice place to watch a movie.
Right. The festival itself has almost two different characters. You've got your core, from a management point of view and an operational point of view, you've got your full-time core team, which is actually a very modest sized team, isn't it?
Well, there's four of us year round.
Yeah, which is
Sharon Byrne, who's the general manager, who should probably be involved in this interview, but is reluctant to get engaged in such encounters. But I mean, she knows a great deal more about many aspects of the administration of a festival than I do. Rebecca McMillan, who is our year-round publicist and works as the Wellington-based publicist for the festival, alongside Lynn Smart and Anna's Falsty Jensen in Auckland, who are on contract. And the fourth full-time member of staff is Michael McDonnell, who's largely working on programming, but his services are also contracted out from us to the Film Society, so he's been programming the Film Societies for the last few years as well.
What a fantastic job he's been doing for them,
Michael was a terrific colleague to have, and he works a lot on the New Zealand short film competition. And since we took the New Zealand short component on the festival back after the Moving Image Centre dissolved, that's a vast increase in the workload, a vast amount of work, which Michael has been managing very nicely, I think.
Mm. How many people were working for the festival when you started as director? Like,
when I started,
how did it used to run?
The first festivals I worked, it was just the Wellington Film Festival, and there was this iniquitous arrangement with the Auckland Festival Society who ran the Auckland Film Festival, where they basically coattailed on a lot of the work that Lindsay Shelton had been doing, and paid a really miserable share of the expenses to do so. And because I came to the film festival from having worked in independent distribution for Richard Weatherly, which is a whole other story, of course, but I knew enough about how the business worked to see that the situation that the Wellington Film Festival had got itself into with Auckland wasn't exactly a fair trade arrangement. And so I was able to make some changes in that, but it wasn't until 1984 when we actually became, from Wellington, directly involved in running the Auckland Film Festival, that it was possible to expand the staff to two, from just me to two.
You doubled.
Yeah, we did. We doubled. And even then, the board was so cautious about these new commercial arrangements, which was how some people rather negatively styled the changes as being kind of commercial, which was a bad word. The second position had to be reconsidered at the end of every film festival, so I could never employ anybody on a full-time basis. It was just a year-long contract, and it was quite a while before that situation changed.
You just mentioned a board, and it's something that every so often crosses my mind. You're so identified with the New Zealand International Film Festival over so many years, but presumably you still have people to answer to.
I do, yeah. I mean, I say the buck stops with me, but ultimately it doesn't, actually. there's a board, and I mean, they're unpaid for their work, and it's a board that's... there are two members of that board appointed by the New Zealand Federation of Film Societies, who set up the Film Festival Trust in the first place. And the other board members, they're essentially recruited by the board itself. So there's something a little bit self-perpetuating about the board. Lindsay Shelton only just stepped down from the board last year, having founded the film festival and stayed on its board for the subsequent 30 years.
And you don't have things like annual general meetings that the public can attend, do you?
There is an annual general meeting, and all our information is publicly available. So we are, as a charitable trust, subject to the same public scrutiny as any other charitable trust. Of course, being a charitable trust has the big advantage of that is being tax exempt in the unlikely event that you turn a profit. Not exempt from any other taxes, unfortunately.
No, but in terms of profit or surplus or such like, or the commercial realities of maintaining or sustaining the operation as it stands, the commercial realities will have changed enormous amounts over the time that you've been involved in the festival. What's the sort of, I guess, the guiding pressure for you at the moment in terms of the commercial side of the business?
Well, we're under pressure to break even or turn a small profit, and we did last year, but the year before that we lost a heap of money, thanks largely to the Rugby World Cup. We never anticipated the damage it would do to us in the provinces, which is, looks kind of stupid now, but we thought there'd be rugby widows who would be turning up to the film festival. We were the rugby widows, I'm afraid we were left standing alone.
And those commercial pressures, I mean, I guess, what proportion of your revenue or your income comes from ticket sales?
It's around 90%. And this year we've already experienced an alarming drop-off in other income, in that there's just been a sudden migration away from print advertising, and you'll find less advertising in our printed catalogues than we'll ever seen before. And we weren't prepared for this. There was no sign of it last year. We had people on standby for print ads last year, but suddenly it's been deemed, I think quite erroneously too, because I think that print advertising in the film festival catalogue delivers great value. People retain, you know, for a certain kind of advertiser, those programs have a much longer retention rate than the average magazine, that's for sure.
Well, and not only that, I saw people carrying half a dozen away when they picked them up from the festival launch in Auckland. You know, that they actually have they're permanent parts of people's bookcases.
Yeah.
In many respects, and particularly since the loss of the souvenir program.
We're talking of commercial realities. It was a sad day when we had to face the commercial reality that that was costing us far more than it was probably obtaining for us in terms of. I think the souvenir program brought us great credibility from people who could never get to the film festival. It's an enormously useful tool in persuading people away from New Zealand to entrust their films to us. It showed that we were serious. I was very sorry to see it go. On the other hand, there's probably less need for it than ever, because there's just so much material readily online for anybody who wants to research the films that we're showing. It does mean that there's one less avenue for published, locally written work about films, and that's probably what I'm saddest about.
Let's go back to your team now. You've got four in the office working 12 months a year. How big is the team at the moment? Because you're less than a week away from the Auckland.
I would have lost count. I'd have to. I'll start by saying there's two full-time interns in the Wellington office and one full-time intern in the Auckland office. In Auckland, we have a publicist in Arnis, Lynn Smart, who's the manager, and there are two assistants there, Felicity Drace and Kate McGee. And in Wellington, we have the publications are run from Wellington, so Chris is the publications manager for the first time this year. We have Katie, who is assisting Sharon. We have Roshni, who I think is doing a great job on all the social media communications. And we have Hayden and Eula, who have the job I would least want to have, which is managing the importing of all the DCPs and getting them to the screening venues and lining up the KDMs.
Yeah, isn't it fascinating that the transfer, the transition to digital has meant essentially a doubling of the workload? You used to have one print controller.
It's more than doubling, I think, in a way, because it's, it certainly doubles the delivery imperative, because you're delivering the DCP and then you're delivering the KDM, which is the code that opens the time-specific code that opens the DCP so that the screening can go ahead. But it means you, from the office, there's much more direct contact with the projection boxes or whoever's responsible for projection in each complex. It used to be much simpler when it was a matter of scheduling 135 mil print around the country. And it would get to the projectionist, and the projectionist would know absolutely exactly what to do with it, give or take, get it in the right ratio. But that information was all, you know, very easily made available. So that whole, in 2 years, that whole delivery schedule's changed completely. For me as a programmer, it kind of frees up a few things and enables us to screen, to thread a film through the festival, for example, a film where I'm sure here's a film no one's heard of, but if we can seed some screenings into the first weekend in Auckland, maybe by the time we get to the last weekend of the film festival, enough people will have heard of it to justify a screening at the Civic. So a film like Broken Circle Breakdown, for example, which is a film that I know has the ability to go from zero to hero on the festival program. Once I would have just had, you know, 3 days, that film would have been available for 3 days in Auckland, and then it was time to go to Wellington. Now it can be strung right through the festival.
And that that flexibility puts sort of added pressure on you to be creative about your programming. As you're suggesting, there would have been a time when it was much more of a logistical exercise than a creative one.
Yeah, it still is to some degree, of course, but I think there's a little bit more creative freedom available in the programming now. But it's still a gridlock at the end of the day. I mean, you're still limited by, particularly in Wellington, it's a terrible gridlock this year because of the limited number of DCP screens available to us. There's no DCP at Tapapa, there's no DCP at the archive. So you'll find there are a few films this year that have penthouse exclusive screenings, whereas in the past we always wanted there to be at least two screenings of every film in the CBD.
That's an interesting question, actually, because you've reached out to the Hutt Valley for the first time, and it seems that that the festival, that idea of a sort of festival core in the city, it seems to be sort of dissipating a wee bit over time. Is that because that's where the people are?
I'm ambivalent about it myself. My personal preference is for a CBD event, absolutely. But there's enormous demand for taking it away from the CBD a little, especially in Auckland. I mean, those Bridgeway screenings, we already have sellouts on the board, and the Lido won't be far behind. So there's a big demand for those. But I feel a bit sad about the energy they siphon off from the city.
That's right. I remember in my early experiences of the festival in Wellington were of just sort of bumping into people as you run backwards and forwards between the venues. What have you just seen? Was it any good?
I think that's still very much the Wellington experience of the film festival. I mean, we still have jam-packed schedules at the Paramount and the embassy, and there's quite a lot happening at the film archive in the second week, and Te Papa during the first and second weekends. I'm afraid our access to Te Papa is quite, apart from the DCP issue, it's quite restricted compared to the way they really rolled out the carpet for us in the early days at Te Papa. It's not the case anymore.
Is that because they've just got other events taking precedence?
Yeah, their commercial division apparently has precedence over bookings of the kind that we can provide.
Right. Let's talk briefly, just sort of to wrap this the interview up, because we'll be talking to, or have we finished talking through? No, I interrupted you actually while you were going through your staff list, because we got to your
I broke your chain of thought there.
I think
we got to your to your KDM wranglers.
Yeah, I think I've got. Oh no, there's also Catherine Swallow, who's working on the outreach area. That's the person I'd passed by, and Catherine's job, I think it'd be a very enjoyable job actually, is just, even though it involves a degree of cold calling and just letting people know about the films in the festival we think might interest them, making sure, for example, that every architect in the land knows about the human scale, and that photographers all know about the Tim Hetherington film, and the William Yang film, and the Antarctic film too, of course. that's one of those jobs that's as big as you want to make it, really, like most of the jobs at the film festival, really.
Yeah. You have a Wellington manager as well, who does a lot of the work on the ground in terms of gathering, yeah. because you actually bring in volunteers from the Film Society to help support the daytime.
Yeah, well, Robin staff the key venues directly. So Robin Harper, who's our Wellington manager, and I think we all love Robin. It's fantastic having Robin coming back on the team. She has a huge job. And then if you start, you know, once the festival gets underway, then the staff expands considerably, of course, particularly in those areas where we're directly staffing, such as Wellington, with vast squads of floor staff. Mm. And we employ the projections directly too, in the most of the Wellington venues. We have... we retain Josh Thomas as our manager in Dunedin, and Nick Paris, of course, in Christchurch. It's impossible to imagine the festival in Christchurch without Nick's extraordinary energy.
Mm. I remember when I was custodian of this place we're sitting in at the moment, the Paramount, and how your high presentation standards meant that we could sometimes rely on you guys to come in a couple of weeks before the festival and sort us out. is that still the case? Do you go around to do your team go around to venues and make sure that they're pucker?
Yeah. Ian Freer is a very busy man. Maybe I should have included Ian on that list too, although now he's employed by NEC, who are festival sponsors, so the relationship with Ian as that kind of overall technical overseer and guru remains. But the amusing thing is, of course, that DCP means that it's pretty straightforward with DCP. Either it works or it doesn't. Or, you know, in those unfortunate instances at the Penthouse last year,
the subtitles
don't appear. But there's still quite a few screenings on other digital formats like HDCam and quite a few Blu-rays this year. And there are a few 35mm films too. The archival material, The Crowd, for example, is very rare 35mm print of that film. So those are the areas where quality control becomes... our most direct concern, I think, less so with the DCP, which is pretty simple matter of having the right lens and just pressing go. Mm.
Let's talk about the films now. And my preference whenever I look at the program is to almost start at the back and work my way to the front. I like the idea of all the gems that don't take up a whole page or a half page of the program, but need a lot of sort of extra fossicking around in terms of attention and you know working out exactly what they are and where they stand, but they are all gems of some description or another. What do you think of the, you know, I know that in a lot of the interviews that you've done, there's still, you focus on the highlights and the ones that you want to sell 2,000 seats to.
Need to.
Yeah, need to.
I mean, those films are always placed there with a degree of confidence that they deserve that kind of treatment. So, I have no compunction at all about working quite hard to ensure that lots and lots of people see Anthony Powell's Antarctic film. It's a stunning film, and nobody's going to be annoyed with me afterwards, that's for sure.
And that's one that I think's come up in every conversation that I've had with you about this festival, even when we were sort of talking about it very early on when we were still doing the autumn event sort of material.
Yeah.
That's something that's obviously very that you have a not a personal stake in, but a personal, but you love.
Right? Yeah, and I've watched it take shape, and
yeah.
I was just completely thrilled when I saw the final, you know, what he'd finally achieved with the film. So I do think, I do think that I have a kind of sneaking identification with the film, and I really want to see it have the success I believe it deserves. Jess Feast's film is another one I've been talking up quite a lot, and it's not quite the same story, because I knew that Jess was making the film, but I wasn't all that acquainted with Jess, because her Cowboys and Communists was the year that I took off, the year I wasn't paying attention. This is still this kind of black hole in my in my experiences of the films of 2007, of which Jess's documentary was one. But when Vicky Pope, the producer, and Jess showed me the film, I mean, just thought it was so special. And the one thing that probably surprised me the most about it, it's a film about a really homely subject, but it's not a homely film. It's a very elegantly wrought tribute to from a young woman, a young married woman who has only just recently had a baby, to a 90-year-old woman who's chosen this celibate life, a completely different kind of life, and as Jess makes it clear in her film, a very full life.
Observant viewers of films will have noticed that there's often with New Zealand feature films, there's a thank you to you buried in the credits somewhere, and there's not, and I don't imagine that thank you is just for programming a film. What involvement do you have? Do filmmakers come to you often with you know, can you give us some advice?
Well, they've been encouraged to do that by the Film Commission, that has to be said, and the Film Commission clearly see the film festival as a quite viable way of getting films out into, well, to a New Zealand audience. And so the Film Commission clearly made that known to filmmakers and say to them, look, why don't you show your film to the film festival and see how interested they are? And a few filmmakers have not only done that, but sort of come to me for notes. And, you know, I mean, I've tried to be helpful where I can be, but only where I'm invited to be, because clearly there are some filmmakers who are quite, and I think quite legitimately and understandably, resistant to that kind of input from the programmer. It's completely their choice to pay any attention to me or not. But certainly the Film Commission have, the way the Film Commission is currently constituted, they've sort of helped legitimise the film festival as a viable platform for New Zealand filmmakers.
What sort of works both ways? That they've legitimised the film festival, but the film festival then goes legitimises the films in return. To
yeah, the relationship has been a shifting one over the years. I'm very happy with the way it sits at the moment.
Right. I wonder whether now that you're sort of up to your eyeballs in organisational stuff, you'll even remember this. But I was wondering, what was the first film that you selected for this festival? And do you remember when?
It was the Regardus film, Close Tenebrous Looks.
Oh, which was one that sort of missed out.
Yeah, they told us when we invited it last year, they said, look, I'm sorry, we want to pause and think of, well, Senor Regardus wants to pause and think about it and maybe tinker with the film before it has any further screenings. So I don't know if that was their way of saying Toronto have told us they'll give us a good spot if we don't screen it anywhere else, or whether they actually did tinker with it. I haven't watched the film closely enough to know that, but that was definitely the first film onto this year's program over a year ago.
Right, and what was the last one?
Our closing night film. It was Only Lovers Left Alive, because it was quite a process involved in having our screening approved by Mr. Jarmusch himself. So that was from us to the distributor to the sales agent to Mr. Jarmusch. So yeah, we were very happy when that came in. It came in exactly at the right moment, enabling us to have a clear weekend to finalise the schedule. There have been years when we've been holding out for films where we've had Schedule A and Schedule B and even Schedule C, depending on certain films being confirmed after deadline. You have to really, really want a film to allow that situation to arise, but it has happened a few times.
And you still schedule on a hard copy, don't you?
Yeah, I can't see any other way of doing it. If you were going to develop some software to do it, you would spend the whole year writing the software, and you would have to be, it's just impossible. The number of factors that you would need to try to feed into such a system would be insane to try.
The Christchurch program was only launched at the beginning of this week, wasn't it? And where else? Like, are you still programming for the rest of the country?
Yeah, we are. We're very frustrated at the moment because certain distributors are dithering about whether or not we can have their films for Palmerston North and Hamilton. God help us. anyway, we're launching Dunedin on Monday night, and I would love to have Palmerston North and Hamilton to the printers before Auckland gets underway, but there are a few obstacles to that in the meantime.
I think that's something that Auckland and Wellington audiences don't I think really have a perspective on. There's the way that the festival continues its role around the country after it's finished here.
Yeah, I do keep meeting people who are surprised by it. But I also meet a lot of people who first, I think maybe this is a Wellington thing because of that long-standing affinity between Dunedin and Wellington. I meet a lot of people who tell me that they went to the festival in Dunedin as students and kind of developed the habit there, and as glorious as the embassy is, still pine for the regent in some weird way. Maybe they're just pining for their lost views like all of us.
Bill, thanks very much for your time. Really appreciate you being on Cinematica once again. And I think we've got yet another perspective on the mammoth beast that is the New Zealand International Film Festival. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Hi, I'm Rebecca McMillan, and I'm the Wellington-based publicist for the film festival. The nature of this office is that your role can take on many tasks. I am here year-round, so when I'm not doing publicity, I'm also doing all of the censorship applications for the film festival, a mighty task, as well as any other administrative roles that are required here.
And what's the most exciting thing that's happened to you today?
A very exciting thing happened to me today, Dan. If I can just relive the moment when my phone rang and I picked it up and Michael Apted introduced himself. That was a pretty exciting moment in my day today.
And was he ringing for just to have a chat or any particular reason?
He's quite keen to promote his film 56 Up, which is screening in the film festival this year. So I'm very keen to line that up for him.
Indeed. He's not travelling with it, is he? So these will be phoners or Skypes.
That's right. We would organise phoners, and because he's based in the UK at the moment, we would aim to do Skype interviews for the best connection.
As publicist, what does that sort of involve once you're at this point in the, as we record, we're less than a week away from the Auckland Festival opening night, which means that we're not very far off Wellington. I mean, in that period when Wellington and Auckland are both running simultaneously must be just ferociously hectic.
Yeah, you could say it's a little bit crazy. We aim to line up as many interviews as we can for the New Zealand filmmakers who are having their world premieres. So at this point, 1 week out from Auckland, myself and my colleague Anna's in Auckland are just making sure that we've tied down as much as we can for those guys. And we're also slotting in international interviews. So with Michael Apted, I will spend the next hour making sure that I line him up for something exciting.
Only the most high-profile, biggest audience shows, I would imagine, would be where you'd be wanting to place him. Cinematica, of course, would be very high up on that list. Is he one of those people that says, "Oh, look, I only want to do one print, one radio," or is he just going to do? Can you line him up to do, a whole evening's worth?
That's going to be the big question to be answered when I phone Michael back. Someone like him, I mean, I would love to get at least one key radio, one key press. And, I mean, if he was travelling, we would line him up for television as well. We love Cinematica, so of course we would try to place him with Cinematica as well.
That's excellent. Right answer. Now, you're also the keeper of the previews and the screeners, and there's most people wouldn't realise that actually there's the way that you generate a lot of attention for the festival is to make sure that key media have seen some of your titles beforehand, so that they can write their preview articles, or they can do their some of its bloggers, but a lot of its the mainstream media as well. So what's your rationale behind those? You know, because every film's got its own sort of restrictions about who's entitled to see it beforehand. You know, so it's a big thing to wrangle, right?
It is a bit of a beast, Dan. We do have to keep them under lock and key. We do have a number of screeners, we call them, so DVDs that will come in for a film, and we just need to strategise whether they can be watched for review, which isn't actually allowed for a lot of films, but we also need the DVDs to help journalists prep for interviews. So ideally I would have 56 Up on DVD, and I would supply that ahead of Michael Apted being interviewed by Dan Slevin for Cinematica. And it is something that we're quite protective of. Piracy is obviously rife around the world, as we all know, and so we need to treat those as a precious commodity. It is really a favour that the distributors allow us to have a DVD copy of a film, so we track very closely who we send those out to. And I have to say, in this world of DCP now, we're not getting DVDs as often as we'd like. So a hard drive is the only format for a film. And as a result, we can't supply some films for review that could definitely do with a review to get that advance word of mouth ahead of the festival screenings.
And do you work pretty closely with the owners of the films, the distributors, on a strategy around individual films?
Definitely. It's a conversation that we have. We strategise here. We confirm it with them because it affects all of us, and they have to agree who they want seeing their film beforehand.
Hi, I'm Robin Harper. I'm the Wellington Festival Manager.
Hi, Robin. What does the Wellington Festival Manager do?
Well, my job is a contract position, and my job is to basically organise the festival in Wellington, the day-to-day stuff. So I work with the venues to make sure that the venues are ready. I take on new staff, so lots of interviewing and training, organising rosters. And just when the festival's on, I'm pretty much on the ground just making sure nothing goes wrong.
There's always a lot of familiar faces around the festival, in terms of box office staff and ushers and what have you. How many people sort of come back year after year, and how many people, like, what's the turnover like?
I would say it's more than 50% of our staff are returning staffs, which is amazing. We have plenty of people who have been working for 10 years and more. So we have quite a big group of experienced people, but we do have to employ new people every year. We get quite a few people who are here, you know, on their OE or something like that, so they'll come and work for 1 year and the next year they're gone. So there are usually positions available, but more and more we're getting people returning.
Just on a sort of when the festival's actually sort of up and running, Do you get a chance to stop and watch films, or are you just going from place to place and making sure that everything starts on time, and you know that the guests are where they're meant to be, and like how does that is it just absolutely all consuming, or do you get a chance to sort of stop every now and then and go, oh, you know, I've always wanted to see this, or this was on my agenda.
Not often. Yeah, I mean, I have got two or three films this year that I really would love to see, and I'm going to see if I can fit that into my schedule somehow. Having experienced staff really helps a lot, because I kind of can feel confident that everything's going to go smoothly and I can maybe just skip off. But pretty much I'm around all the venues and don't get a lot of time to sit down.
Hi, my name is Roshni Prabhu, and I do online content for the International Film Festival.
And how long have you been working here?
This is my first stint, so 3 months.
All right. Are you enjoying it so far?
Very much, very much. It's been a great ride. Every day is something new, because, you know, with the website and social media, you don't know what you're going to get. But it's been great interacting with the film community in, Auckland, Wellington, and, well, the rest of New Zealand.
So what does your position involve on a day-to-day basis? Like, what would you spend most of your time doing?
Most of my time is, getting the website with the right content. So at least for the first month, when we started off in May, we were just getting it up and ready with all the film notes that you see, with enough information about what the films are coming up. And come June, when we were preparing for a program launch, we were putting up schedules. So it was actually a massive effort of working with interns, 3 volunteers. We were working round the clock, and it was wonderful. I mean, we couldn't have done this without the great help from the volunteers that we have coming in all the time. So, yes. And of course, you know, keeping our social media fresh all the time. So we've got Facebook, Twitter, Google Plus, YouTube.
Google Plus.
Yes, we do. It is a bit on the, we need to ramp up our efforts there. But we believe that most of our community really loves what we do on Facebook and Twitter and Pinterest as well.
And of course, there's a lot of people giving you feedback through all of those, that social media as well. It used to be that you might get letters, from people, and they'd arrive after the festival and you couldn't do anything about them. But now people feel totally free to either talk to you direct or subtweet their comments and their feedback. So you're monitoring all of that?
Yes, I am doing that, and it's been wonderful. I mean, not only do you get lots of love from everyone out there, sending you links about, what's out there, what other people are talking about, things that I might have missed out. We also get links, people asking questions on, just basic stuff, like what do I watch? And, we've been sharing, we've even shared Cinematica's podcast out, so that's been great, and people have loved it, so that's, I think, social media has made it so much more easier to make a festival that everyone can enjoy.
Hi, my name is Yule, and I'm the this year's content manager for the festival. Previously known as print controller, but because it's now mainly digital content, it's been renamed as content manager. My role is mainly to make the content come into the country if it's from abroad, or you know, get all the films from local filmmakers. That's the first part of the job. Then it is to assist with the scheduling of the festival, because the festival director will need to know how long he can screen a certain film for, or whether it has to go to another festival. So when, if there's a time limit to a certain film to be in the country, the next stage is then to supply all participating cinemas with their films on time to ingest them on their servers if it is digital content, or you know, there's still a few 35mm prints around as well, making sure they have everything on time, everything runs smoothly, that they have time to test the films, so just trying to avoid as many hiccups as possible. Then also with all these different venues and cities involved, there's a lot of overlap, so I'm in charge of making sure that the prints are moved between venues and between cities, so I have to just make sure that all the follow-on venues, so it starts in Auckland, obviously, a week later Wellington starts, I just have to make sure that the prints are moved when they've been scheduled to move. So, and then, of course, once the festival is over, I am the one who will send everything back, or the materials go back to other festivals or to the filmmakers or production companies.
Have you ever done a job like this before?
I've never worked for a film festival. I have worked in the UK for a distribution company, so I have been at the other end, basically. I've been supplying films for festivals or organised events with festivals, mainly, you know, the London Film Festival or Edinburgh. But, yeah, no, I have never worked in this environment before.
What's your worst nightmare?
Well, with this digital content, it sort of makes it easier in some respects, but it is just much more, you can't really test it so well. So the nightmare would be, you know, having a sold-out cinema, let's say the Civic, which sits 2,000 people plus, and, you know, the film not working. But with the Civic, we have... We're in a position to test the prints in advance, so hopefully that's not going to happen.
Hi, I'm Catherine, and I'm the outreach coordinator at the New Zealand International Film Festival.
And what does an outreach coordinator do? It sounds very important.
Well, I liaise with communities, so if we've got a Saudi Arabian film, I will sort of get in touch with the Saudi Arabian community and say, hey, you should check this out. Particularly if it's as great as Wajda is. so that's basically what I do. So it's a lot of liaising with schools, community groups, wrangling these phenomenal databases that we have, which are incredibly exhaustive.
There's a lot of history to the festival, and so there would be a lot of information that you can use to go back to. You can see what films have been successful with what groups, so you're not coming in cold necessarily.
Yeah, that's right, definitely. So there's a huge database. In fact, lovely little story. I don't know if I was talking to a guy the other day who's a surfcaster, and we'd sent him the film, the information about Uncharted Waters, and he called me up wanting to buy a ticket, and I sort of said, oh well, you know, this is how you can go about it, and then he said, I don't know how you got my number, and I said, oh, and I don't know either. It's, you know, probably been in the system for some time, and he said, maybe it's because I give Lindsay Shelton some fish from time to time. And I thought that was really lovely. So definitely history. Some of these databases, you can see they date back to sort of, we've got 2006. I don't think I've seen any notes from earlier than that, but yeah, they've been built up over years and years, which just goes to show what a sort of loyal following the festival has.
And your role would also involve a lot of sort of thinking outside the box, wouldn't it? There isn't just one single way or one single audience for any particular film.
Yeah, that's right, and that's kind of the fun of the job, is sort of to every single communication I'm doing is looking at who this person is, where do they come from, what are they interested in. And sometimes you get absolutely completely unexpected things. I might be emailing someone about the computer films, and he comes back saying, I'm really interested in Laos. And so then, yeah, you just have these sort of off-the-wall kind of connections that happen. It's really lovely.
And are you doing that for the whole country?
Yes, I am. So I'm the national coordinator, but we have people in Auckland, Christchurch, Dunedin, who sort of help out that I coordinate with. So,
My name's Chris, and I'm the publications coordinator for the film festival this year.
And what does a publications coordinator do?
Basically, that means that I'm looking after the publication process of getting the programs to print. So that's the main programs and then the mini guides for Auckland and Wellington.
And not just, there are programs for Auckland and Wellington, but you're also responsible for all of the other territories. It makes it sound like it's much grander than it is, but all of the other cities as well?
Yeah, that's right. So after the big ones have gone off, so Auckland, Wellington, Christchurch, Dunedin, we also look after the smaller regions. So we've got Palmerston North and Hamilton, Tauranga, Nelson, Hawke's Bay, yep.
And you make it sound like it's a much smaller job than I know it is, because when you've got, let's say for the Auckland program, you've got maybe 150 plus films to include in the guide, you've got to get stills, you've got to get copy from places. Are you responsible for gathering all of that information?
Yeah, so I'm responsible for working with Bill, other programmers and note writers, getting copy from them, editing them, getting those out to proofreaders. Everything gets proofed 3 times. And then working with our designer as well to get it all laid out and looking pretty.
And who decides what gets what level of prominence in the program? So who decides what gets a full page as opposed to a quarter page?
So I try to fit everything in to begin with, and then I'll show it to Bill, and then Bill will say, no, we've got to bump that up, we've got to bump that down. So ultimately it's Bill's decision, but if I can convince him otherwise because of space issues, yeah, we have a talk about it.
And if something's got a great still, a great image, are you inclined to give that more prominence than a film that maybe the image isn't quite as strong?
We don't usually base it on the image. It's the other way around. If we've bumped it down to like a quarter page, then we might have to change the image because the image doesn't work at that size. But it's films that we think deserve a bit of attention, and that we really want people to take notice of, and that we obviously want to sell to people. So that's sort of what dictates what gets the sort of prominence in the program. Yeah.
I wrote a program note last year for one particular film, and the guidelines were the most incredibly precise that I've ever encountered in any kind of writing work that I've ever done, because you've got to produce not just a program note but also a pull quote and blah blah blah. I mean, tell us a little bit about that, because you know exactly what space each thing has to fit into. Yeah,
so we try to plan ahead, so Bill will have an idea of what sort of films might need a half page. So he'll often do a half page and a quarter page. And then when you get into the quarter pages, you've got different formats for documentaries and feature films. So we've got to allow for different character counts for those formats as well. But yeah, it's a tight squeeze. It's not as much space as most people seem to think it is. There've been a lot of times where we've had to cut a lot of stuff, so it all fits. But yeah, it's also choosing pull quotes for the bigger program notes, and then writing ad lines for the mini guides and the newspaper adverts, and yeah, checking that all the credits are correct, and because they all go online as well, of course.
My name's Lynn Smart, and I am the manager of Auckland for the festival, and I've been doing it for 24 years now, so I'm an old hat at it.
What's the biggest change that you've noticed in those 24 years?
When I first started, we used to manually do tickets, and now we've got Ticketek on board, and it's a huge job that the festival couldn't do their own ticketing, because there's just so many sessions and so many films.
What was it like in the manual days? So you did it all, or you had people not here at the Civic, because you weren't here at the Civic, and you were.
We were, one year we would be at the Civic, and the next year we'd be at the St James, so we had alternate years. But we were lucky because we had the same girls doing the ticketing every year. I remember when I first came back to New Zealand after my OE, I stood in a long line on Hobson Street and had to stand on the pavement, and they went right up the stairs, and that's how we used to get our tickets. And then once I started, they were already at the Civic and the St James, and so we were doing that inside the venues, doing the ticketing then.
There are a lot more venues now that you are responsible for. The festival in Auckland is now not just a CBD event, it's spread out across the city. What difference does that make for you?
Not really, because we're at the Lido and the Bridgeway, and their staff and management actually do the day-to-day running of those. We sell tickets on their behalf until 5 o'clock on the night prior, and then if there's any tickets left, which is hardly ever, they sell out so fast. The theatre themselves sell the rest of those tickets, but the Rialto, the Academy, the Civic and Sky City, these are sold from the Ticketek, so, and right up to the time, and you can go to any venue and buy your tickets for the night and also advance sales.
We're sitting in the glorious Civic, the most amazing venue I've ever been in my life, whether it's to watch something or to just sit here in the foyer and marvel at all the gilt and the elephants and there's people up ladders changing bulbs and chandeliers. It's just the most marvellous place. And of course, this refurb hadn't happened when you first joined the festival, so you will have seen the transformation.
Yes, actually, Bill Gosden and myself, we were privileged to be brought here when they were actually restoring it, and we had hard hats on and we walked around, and it was the most amazing experience from where it used to be and how it is now. It's absolutely amazing, and it's something that Auckland should be very proud of.
And I think the rest of the country as well. I'm not sure if there are many Wellington festival goers who quite realise what an amazing palace this is. You know, like, we're really proud of the Embassy down in Wellington because it's a fantastic cinema, but this is something else.
Yeah, well, we are full house, is over 2,500 people, and it takes a lot of getting people in, but it's very exciting and it just comes alive. And like, the staff here love to have us because they are very proud of the theatre, and we're very proud having the festival here.
Now, you're getting close to crunch time because as we record, it's the day before the first screenings, the opening of the festival. You've just moved in here to the Civic. What's your day like today? What have you been dealing with?
Hectic. Had Bill Gosden on the phone. He's still in Wellington. He comes up tomorrow. And we've got Goblin playing on Friday, but they arrived this evening. And we've got a rehearsal, full rehearsal tomorrow at 1 o'clock. And so it's just, we're getting all the information from their Perth gig for the one that we're going to have here. And so it's just kind of ironing all that out. The phone's been ringing non-stop, people saying, oh, I haven't got my tickets for the gala, have they been posted out? And so we're kind of manning all that. That's pretty frantic day.
And the Goblin Suspiria gig, that's a step above the normal sort of live cinema that you might do as part of the festival, because this is like a rock show, isn't it?
Yes, it is, rock and horror, meeting halfway. It's exciting for us, but we're very privileged. Every year we have the APO and a silent film, and that sells out every year, which we're very lucky about, and so we're just hoping Goblin are able to bring the horror antics and whatever the people want to do on the night and bring the Civic alive with that.
And there's still some tickets available? We can give it a big push tomorrow as well?
Yeah, definitely. We've still got seats available. There's some good seats we'll be putting back on sale once they get here. We're having the rehearsal tomorrow afternoon, so we'll be able to see if we can add more seats downstairs and so you're up close to the Goblin.
Do you get a chance to actually watch any films during the festival? Is that a naive question on my part?
That is the bone of my contention. No, I don't. And some of my staff get to go, which is very lucky of them. But every year I try to get to one. But as time's gone on, we actually get screeners of some of the films, so I don't feel so hard up now. But no, I don't really. My family get there. So they tell me what they're like.
Lynn Smart, thanks very much for being on Cinematica.
Thank you very much.
That was Lynn Smart, Auckland manager for the New Zealand International Film Festival, rounding off our look at what goes on behind the curtain at this wonderful event. It's not the last of the Cinematica Festival coverage, though. We'll be appearing live in person at the Winter Garden next Tuesday for a special recording of the show. Bring your friends and your two-word reviews and be prepared to get down. Wellingtonians, you're not going to miss out because we're negotiating a special Wellington event, a date and time to be announced soon. Other than that, that's it from me. Have a great festival, everybody.